if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 329. This is our 2024 Shriners Children's Open and Estrella Dam Andalusia Masters Tips podcast. What a mouthful. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss our selection for this week's PGA Tour and DP World Tour action. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Visit our world-famous golf betting system website where we have in-depth betting previews for both events. We've got TPC Summerlin strokes gained rankings, form stats, plus, of course, new and old predictor models for all of the golf action this week. Our content is available across both events completely free of charge. There is no paywall. On X, you can follow Barry at A Good Talk Golf, Paul at Golf Betting, I am at Bamford Golf. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available each and every week. Now, you guys as listeners, part of this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. My favourite podcast of the week, five stars, is this particular review. I look forward to my 45-minute commute every Tuesday because these guys are coming through my car speakers. Their breakdowns are phenomenal. They're one of the few set of golf experts that actually help me win money, and they have a sense of humour that give me a chuckle before a long day of work. I usually follow up with a 5 to 10 minute read on their website of their in-depth course breakdown, short and long-term player statistics, previous winner interviews, weather analysis, predictor model, and their recommended bets for the week, both PGA and DP World Tour in brackets. I highly recommend to anyone interested in the sport, whether you place bets or not, keep it up, guys. You all crush it every week. That is from Chris. And Chris is from the Washington, D.C. area in the United States. Chris, thank you for your time.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks, Chris. You might have to go the scenic route with your drive this week because I think it's going to be quite a lengthy pod this week.
That's an awesome review. It's almost like Steve wrote it, gave it to Chris to send it in. It's covered everything.
Just proofread.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I did think that as I was reading it, but it is true.
Brilliant.
We've got a very busy podcast line up for you, but before we review last week, we would just like to take time to highlight that the Golf Betting System podcast has just passed through the 1 million download barrier across all channels. I think that deserves a little round of applause, chaps.
Absolutely.
1 million downloads.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks, guys. Thanks for making us what we are today by pushing us through that that barrier.
First time I've been a millionaire. It's nice.
Mm-hmm. We've had many ups and downs along the way. Mm. WDs. I had one of those this week. We've had plenty of miscuts. Second places and the odd winner since our very first podcast, which was the 2017 Masters. We would like to thank you guys, the hardcore listeners, they're definitely hardcore at this time of the season, for your ongoing support of the pod and the Golf Betting System website. Thank you to one and all. I'm just going to say here, guys, if you listen to all of our 329 from today podcasts continuously, it's over 15 days of continuous listening. Wow.
That would be a lot of listening. That would be...
15 days.
A lot of second place finishes.
What a segue. Last week, talking of second places.
Mm.
Wow. I'll start. I was on Jeff Winter.
Me too.
You were on him, weren't you? And you, were you on Yannick Paul as well, Baron?
Yep.
And Paul was on Paul was on Yannick Smith. Paul. And Thorbjørn also. Amazing.
Unreal.
Yep. What can you do? I mean, a fair play to Dan Bradbury. He did hold his nerve there on 18 to make that return putt. But how fun would it have been to have a big old playoff with three of our players in the mix? That would have been that would have been bananas. But yeah, didn't quite happen, did it? Yannick Paul burnt the edge on 18, didn't he? Olsen had really good chances coming home 16 and 17 and couldn't make them. And Bradbury did. But yeah, well done, guys, anyway. Winthrop was a decent price. He was a better price than the my two, Paul and Olsen. So well done for getting him in the mix, boys. Couldn't quite get one of them over the line, could we?
I mean, it's a great week. It is. Like, you're making profit, but it's just tantalizingly close. Mm. Bradbury got that little bit of luck that you just need on a Sunday when each shot is so critical. Staying, the ball stays above water on, was it 15, I think? If I'm getting the hole wrong. Yeah. And then pushes it and just clears the water again, getting to the green. So, but those are the little breaks that you see every week. You just need those little things to not go against you. And
clutch. I said to my wife at that very point, this guy's going to win, this Bradbury guy.
Mm.
Every time he's slashing it left and right, it was finishing like 2 yards short of the water or 2 yards on the green. You just think, yeah, here we go.
Did you not jump on the exchange and follow up your statement and just put some money on it? Those are the ones that you just need. You always forget to put a bet on when you say something like that. And then an hour later, you're like, oh, well, yeah, I called it.
Clearly, my wife's got no interest in it whatsoever. And she would just went, yes, darling. Well, I thought he's going to win it. We've got all of these players here. He's the one that's going to do us. Sure enough. Yep. Oh, yeah. It was an exciting finish, though. I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, it always is at Le Golf National. That 18th is box office, isn't it? The way that it's set up and the difficulty of the hole. And you go back through and I look at Olsen back on, was it Friday night when he was too clear with a couple of holes to play and then made bogey on 17 and double on 18. And, you know, those tiny things, they kind of get lost by the time you get to Sunday, but that's where the tournament essentially went for him because he could have pulled clear at that point. We've seen him front run from the in the past and been really strong, but just knocked all the momentum out of him at that point. And then he's playing catch up. And if you've got someone like Bradbury who does ride his luck, does hold his nerve, just keeps his nose in front. But yes, we move on, sadly.
Race to Dubai, top 10. For the race for the PGA Tour. Lawrence at one still. Rasmus Højgaard at two. Nicholas Norgaard jumps to three. I think he's pretty much there, guys. Matteo Manassero as well at four. And I think Jesper Svensson's looking pretty nailed on at five as well, just looking at the points that they've accrued. Then we've got Soderberg six, Hoshino seven, McKibben up to eight. He's jumped above Romain Langasque. And number 10, Guido Migliozzi still. Jordan Smith is breathing down his neck at 11. Lacroix, terrible miscut. Angel Hidalgo, Laurie Cantor and Dan Bradbury jumps to 15 in that particular ranking. Four events left to go. Over on the United States, it was a case of week after itis for this particular podcast over there as well. Paul put Matt McCarty up for the Sanderson Farms Championship. And then last week, he becomes one of those very rare players, although it seems to be becoming a little bit more regular now, who wins his PGA Tour maiden victory. I think it was either second or third PGA Tour start.
Second, yeah.
He'd had three Corn Ferry victories already this year. So a very hot hand, as you pointed out last week. Or the week before last.
But yeah, up into the world's top 50 now. That shows you the benefit of getting those quick fire wins over on the Corn Ferry Tour, and then impressively makes his breakthrough. It was, I guess, the way the course set up, the scoring as well. It was kind of more Corn Ferry like in a lot of respects. So
yeah,
with a lack of course experience for the opposition, it was, you know, you could have, even though he kind of dropped away after his debut the week before, you could have made a solid case for sticking with McCarty last week, and clearly I didn't, which is what, frustrating.
What was the reason or the reasons that you didn't stick with him for another week?
Well, just that I kind of observed in the week before where he'd started really well, and then it just seemed like he wasn't quite ready for it. It was kind of my summary of the situation. You know, there's enough talent there, that much is evident. He's a winner, proven winner over the, you know, over the Corn Ferry season. But when push came to shove, you know, just couldn't quite keep up with the pace on the PGA Tour proper. But perhaps it was just a bedding in. It was a 1 week kind of, you know, this is how it's going to be. And yes, I can compete because I've proven it over a round or so. And then comes to a course where there's no history, there's no, you know, there's no handicap for players that are coming in with no prior course or event experience, and walks away with it. Really impressive.
If you look at these fields, they're barely better than Corn Ferry, really, are they?
No, there's not much.
The first three, it's a little bit better this week. You always get a slightly better field in Vegas, although I'd say it's probably the weakest renewal I've seen for a long, long time in Vegas, even this year. But yeah, it was an interesting course, wasn't it, with the lava, as I said, very, very wide fairways. But if you were missing fairways, it was literally a half shot instant penalty. But it was hard to do that. I mean, some of these landing areas were 70, 80 yards wide.
Mm.
But yeah, McCarty, the one, I came no one. I wasn't going to be picking Matt McCarty. That's kind of not what I do. But the one that I was close on that I didn't tip up was Jaeger, because he was long. He was good with a wedge in hand from 125 to 150. That was the one I was kind of kicking myself about not putting up. But in the end, Paul, we did land each way. Lucas Glover actually finally made some putts on Sunday and came in third. I was on him at 35 to 1. I believe you were on him as well. Was that, do am I remembering correctly?
Yeah, I doubled up on him last week, if you remember, because I backed him at 35s, and then 50 to 1 with fewer places was dangled, and I had to have a little bit of that as well. So it was pleasing to see him come through and actually shoot that 9 under final round. That's what he's got under the bonnet right now. Lucas, it's a real shame he's not playing this week.
I know.
It's, you know,
don't get
that kind of player. No, is that kind of player with momentum could go and walk a tournament like this. But yeah, he's not playing, which is a real shame. I don't think he's playing now till the Bermuda Championship, is he?
No, this course would be perfect for him. And as I said last week, I think he's got three top tens. Well, he's got two top tens and a top five in his last four at TPC Summerlin. So his record there is phenomenal, and he's not playing this week. Yeah, Bermuda is his next. Really is his next outing.
He's 61st in the FedEx Fall points list. So if he gets into the top, you know, between 51st and 60th, he gets a start in the AT, the Pebble Beach, and the Genesis. It's just strange.
Suppose he needs a rest, mate. He's no spring chicken, is he, Lucas?
Mm.
But when that putter fires, his approach play at the moment, his tee to green game, is phenomenal. That was the frustrating thing. When you looked at the strokes gain numbers throughout that tournament, Glover was in the top five from the first round.
Yep.
But I think he was second bottom for strokes gain putting on Friday, and he made two birdies, no bogeys.
Mm.
He was just like 8 feet missed. Next hole, 12 foot missed. Next hole, three putts from 28 feet on the par five. You're like, oh my God.
Well, it can blow hot and cold with him, but when it's warm or when it's hot, like it was on Sunday, that's when you want him to carry on. And, you know, yeah, it evidently made the decision not to be playing this week, which could have cost him another win, I think.
Make a mental note for Bermuda, chaps. Mental note. He's clearly going to be very short in the market. Right.
Oh, yeah. 25s, yes. Maybe, but...
But yeah, he's hot. And as Barry said, 61st now. He's the one that's looking in to those 10 spots to get into those first two signature events after the Tournament of Champions.
Mm.
So big carrot. Also, he wants to get that top 50 spot as well in the world rankings. Right, let's move forward then. 2024 Shriners Children's Open is this week. I've always thought this is one of the better full series events. The fields usually are stronger. Slightly disappointed this year. No real big names apart from the defending champion who goes for a three-peat, Tom Kim. Tom's in the field. If you actually look at this event, it goes all the way back to 1983 in Las Vegas. It's got some cracking winners. Tiger Woods, his first ever tour victory. Jim Furyk won it twice. Kevin Na twice. Webb Simpson, Patrick Cantlay, Bryson DeChambeau. Sung Jae-im at, of course, Tom Kim, who is going for this three-peat this year. TPC Summerlin, it's another week of desert golf. 125, 130 miles southwest of where they were playing at the Black Desert Resort last week. It's a slightly different course setup, though. 7,255 yards. It's a par 71. It's a 35-36, three par fives. It's 2,000 feet above sea level as opposed to 3,000 last week. The difference here, though, is it's a lot tighter setup. So at 300-yard carry, we're looking at 33 yards wide as opposed to some of the fairways last week. 60, 70, 80 yards in width at landing areas. So a lot tighter. The agronomy is Bandera Bermuda grass fairways. We've got 419 Bermuda grass rough, which is 2.25 inches. The rough, by the way, is becoming less and less here every year because in Las Vegas, they're basically encouraging golf courses and the like to remove turf because of water shortages. The greens, another week of massive greens, though. 7,400 square feet, dominator bent grass. These are big greens for a golf course that effectively is playing as a 7,000 yard par 71. It's a lights out golf course, effectively. One thing I will say, though, is if you look at the course, if you look at the winners, if you look at the breakdown of the course, it's one of those rarities on the PGA Tour where driving accuracy is far more important. And I know this sounds ridiculous when Bryson DeChambeau's won around here. Driving accuracy is far more important than driving distance. And if you actually look at the way to play a lot of the holes here, the non-par fives, of course, hitting fairways and the advantage you get from hitting the fairway is far more than actually driving the ball a long way on the same hole. Penalty for missing fairways with desert golf, you know, rough, then you're into rocks, sand, cacti, all manner of hazards. That penalty can be very, very serious here with, you know, doubles being a way of life if you're missing it off the tee. So I always think this is more of a plotter's golf course. I mean, Jim Furyk's won round here twice.
Mm.
However, it can be won various different ways. I mean, Kevin Na's also won here twice. So Na, again, short, not overly straight, but a fantastic putter. I think you've seen the last three PGA Tour victories, they've been won by just ridiculous strokes game putting performances. McCarthy was another one of those last week. I think he was second for strokes gained putting, gaining almost two strokes per round with the putter. Difficult to forecast those kind of results in a certain way. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the tournament. One thing I will say, though, is we are in the very non-Las Vegas weather this week. And I think I'm hearing content already that's saying, you know, this is going to be low scoring and the like. I just get the feeling that the weather might have a say. It's not going to be nearly as hot. I mean, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, they're barely clearing 20 degrees Celsius. It's more like 17, 18 degrees, which for US listeners, 64 Fahrenheit, something like that.
Yeah, 63. Yeah, not much.
Now, we're clearly in the Nevada desert. You'd expect it to be warmer than that. And the other thing is, gusts of wind up to 25 miles an hour from the southwest on Thursday. I'm seeing across the full day gusts of over 20 miles an hour, approaching 30 miles an hour from the north, completely different wind direction on Friday. And even on Saturday, it was dead calm when I was looking at this yesterday, but I'm recording this Tuesday morning in the UK. All of a sudden, you're seeing winds popping up to around about 10 to 15 miles an hour, again from the north. Now, I'm not suggesting it's going to turn this into an open championship, you know, where, you know, -3 might win. But the lack of heat and that wind, I just get the feeling where you can see 24, 25 under par winning these tournaments most years. If I was to put a stake in the sand, I reckon 17, 18 under wins. Bit more mid-score. I'm thinking if you're kind of 15 under par, that's where the each way money is going to be coming into play. So just a small, slight change in the kind of what we might expect to see this week for me, just to build that into some form of relevancy for you. In terms of last year, the winning score was 20 under par, and that was mainly because the fairways, the greens were slightly more firm than they usually are Thursday, Friday. 17 under was the score that actually paid each way money. So I could just see that moving down a stroke or two in terms of, you know, the scores that we need to be seeing to actually hit the each way places this week and for the ultimate win. I've come up with four players this week. I'll just strokes going off the tee. I'll just run a few of those quickly. Taking the winners all the way back to Rod Pampling, who won at 20 under par in 2016. If you just look at where the winners were actually ranked in those that made the cut, strokes going off the tee, 25th. Now that, again, that's rare on the PGA Tour. It's normally a lot lower than that in terms of, you know, 10th, 12th, something like that. Strokes going on approach, 10th. Strokes gained around the green, 26th. Strokes gained tee to green, 10th. Strokes gained putting, 19th. So those are the positional strokes gained levels that previous winners here have achieved. If I look at that in terms of just the raw numbers, 60% strokes gained tee to green over the past 3 years and 40% with the putter. So you do need a decent putting performance this week to actually take out the title. I mean, that's a. I'm going back to the Wyndham when in my rankings. At the Wyndham, it's 51% tee to green, 49% with the flat stick. That is incredible. But it's a 60-40 this split this week. Tee to green as opposed to those, you also need 40% of your winning strokes to come from the flat stick. Big number.
Yep.
So team no putt isn't going to get the victory. You want to be seeing at least something positive from the putter aligned to a very, very strong tee to green week. That tee to green number tends to be more approach rather than off the tee. Tom Kim is back to defend. Other players at the top of the betting market: Pendrith, Davis Thompson, Kurt Kitayama, Las Vegas resident, Seamus Power, Las Vegas resident. Believe he's a member. Bo Hosler, Tom Hoagie, Stefan Jaeger, Keith Mitchell, Ben Griffin, Eric Cole. Right, I've gone for four. Winning price here, 14-1 favourite Tom Kim last year. Year before that, we were on board Tom Kim the first year, 22-1, 25-1. Sung Jae Im, 33-1. I don't think that's a bad area to plant your flag this week. I've gone for three near the top. Taylor Pendrith, Davis Thompson, and I've also got Cam Davis in there. I was quite surprised by Cam Davis's price, actually. Yeah. But more of that in a second. Taylor Pendrith, 22-1 I got. Bet 365, eight places each way by their each way extra facility. If you just looked in this field at the player that has played the best golf over the last 8 weeks at the highest level, for me, Taylor Pendrith takes that title. He was 22nd at the St. Jude, 13th at the BMW Championship, bearing in mind they were FedEx Cup playoff events with the strongest fields imaginable. He was then 8th at the Tour Championship on Tour Championship debut for 72-hole scoring. He actually finished 14th in the FedEx Cup rankings for the whole season. You'd have got long odds that Taylor Pendrith would have been 14th in the FedEx Cup when we teed off at the Tournament of Champions in January. Then he goes to the President's Cup and, paired up with Adam Scott, got two wins over Sahith Tikala and Colin Morikawa. That was Morikawa's only loss at the President's Cup. They also beat Brian Harman and Max Homa. So he's in great nick, is Taylor Pendrith. And here at TPC Summerlin, he's finished 47th, 44th, and last year he was third. So 22-1, right ballpark, has course form, playing probably the best golf of his career. I took out Taylor Pendrith at 22-1, two places each way. I also took Davis Thompson. Now, if you look at Davis Thompson, I got 2 points each way, 25-1 with William Hill on Davis Thompson. Just look at the PGA Tour stats this season. He's 8th for scoring average on the whole of the PGA Tour, which is mightily impressive. You know, the names around him are clearly the pick of the crop in terms of the tour. I also like his finishes here. He's had a 12th and a 35th on his two attempts. Eight rounds. He's had five of those rounds have been 67 or better. And actually, when you just look at where he's played well, his last three visits to the desert, 15th, 21st and 15th across Arizona, Mexico and California. So, yeah, Davis Thompson I took at 25-1 as well. I actually got 40-1 on Cam Davis. Just as I'll stop myself because I'm absolutely gagging for a mouthful of tea because I've spoke so much on this podcast, too much, actually. Where are you guys coming in at on your selections? Because clearly my next one is 40-1. Paul, where are you coming in at?
I've got two this week, 60-1 and 100-1.
Barry?
The prices.
It's Vegas week, Steve. I'm going deep in the odds.
Okay. I thought you'd be on Seamus Power, but I'll continue with Cam Davis. 40-1 I got with William Hill, eight places each way, which I thought was an outstanding price, I have to say. Now, I mentioned a few weeks ago, I cannot believe that Mike Weir didn't take Cam Davis to the President's Cup. I mean, if you want a snub, this was a proper snub. He was 8th in the qualifying rankings for the international tour. So Mike Weir effectively placed 5 players that ranked below him into the team. Amazing. And I just thought that was crazy. Bearing in mind that Davis won the Rocket Mortgage Classic in June. He was one of only 3, Matsuyama and Taylor Pendrith, had actually won on the PGA Tour this year. And he didn't take Cam Davis. He took all of these non-winners. Cam Davis had won on the PGA Tour, didn't take him. And to rub even more salt into the wounds, the week before Mike Weir made his selections, Cam Davis had finished fifth at the BMW Championship. Fifth in a mini-major, effectively, that had the 50 top players on the PGA Tour playing in it. He finished fifth, and Mike Weir took Mackenzie Hughes. Bizarre, bizarre, bizarre stuff, I thought. So I just get the feeling that Cam, he might just have a little bit of a sort of chip on his shoulder turning up here. He's played here five times. He's got five paychecks. He was 6th and 13th through 36 and 54 holes in 2022. And then last year he finished 7th. His best ever finish here at Summerling. 67, 67, 67, 66. Love Cam Davis on tracks. He's a similar player in my mind to a Taylor Pendrith. Similar player to a Gary Woodland in his pomp. Who can, has the power to be able just to tee, you know, just to club down on tees, to be straighter off the tee on shorter tracks. And his two wins on the tour have come both at Detroit Golf Club, both at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. He's totaled 18 under par to win both of those. I reckon that kind of target this week is pretty much where you need to be. So I took 40 to 1, 2 points each way on Cam Davis with William Hill. He's also finished third at the 2021 American Express. I think PGA West is a decent correlating course, desert course. Accuracy off the tee, really important. So I've got Pendrith at 22 to 1, Davis Thompson at 25 to 1, and Cam Davis at 40 to 1. Right, Paul, over to you with your 60 to 1 chance, please.
Adam Svensson are back 60 to 1. Opened with 60 last week, flirted with a 59. Second to halfway and then kind of dropped back a bit. Actually, he had to hole a bunker shot, didn't he, to make, or have a, it would have been a 59. I remember in our pod last week, Barry, you were speculating whether there would be a 59 over at the Black Desert Championship, and he came the closest.
Glad I didn't find the market, I would have lost.
Well, yeah, after day one, you'd have probably been quite excited that it could have happened in one of the subsequent days. But yeah, he came the closest. But I do like these, you know, incredibly sparky rounds. Yes, he couldn't quite keep it going for the rest. And, you know, once the euphoria dies down of having been that close, you know, players can be a bit flat. But then we often see him come back and perform well after that. So we shall see. Seventh at the Wyndham. I like Wyndham Championship form for this. 13th at the Pro Tour Championship when the fall series or the fall event started. So some recent-ish form as well, aside from last week. 18th here last year. He opened with 70 and then shot 65-65, middle two rounds, to get himself into seventh place heading into Sunday. It didn't quite happen on the Sunday, but that shows a level of aptitude for the course, I think. Seventh for strokes gained approach last week, and that's his best strokes gained approach number of 2024. So something percolating with Adam Svensson.
I'm with you on Svensson. I've also backed him. I didn't go super deep on everything, Steve. Apologies. It was a bit of a misrepresentation. But yeah, I've backed Svensson as well.
Barry, regular listeners would be depressed if you did go into in-depth research. That's not your that's not the cut of your job, is it?
But you know, there's enough there. Exactly. Recent form, little bit of a hint last year here, 18th. So yeah, good enough for me. And yeah. He's got Paul's seal of approval. So what more validation do I need? Getting ready for T3.
What can go wrong with me and you on the same player, Barry?
Everything. Absolutely everything.
T2 impending. Playoff loss, probably.
I'm coming from left field here. Forgive me, but this is how my brain works. I was going to say well done to the course superintendent at Black Desert last week. They actually got the greens a little bit crispy. They were releasing on Saturday and Sunday, Barry. Can you believe that? Greens that were releasing on the PGA Tour.
It's great.
I was in shock. I was in total shock. Also, another point. Don't ever back Ryan Fox at a desert setup. Doesn't work. Paul tells me all this, but I completely ignore it until I see it with my own eyes on the PGA Tour. Ryan Fox. I still think Ryan Fox has got a good performance in him. Make a note of this. I'm scribbling this down. Anywhere by the coast.
Yep.
And there's a few of those coming up with Foxy, aren't there? Bermuda. That event in Mexico. I know it's in the desert, but they actually just stare down at the Gulf of Mexico, I believe. No, sorry, the Pacific. So there's a lot of seaside golf coming up. I think that's where Ryan Fox will actually kick off. Right. The last bet I've got. This golf course for me, chaps, if you are dead straight, you've got some pretty... Well, I think you've got an advantage, put it that way. And I've said to you guys, there's this crazy thing going on a lot of these events. And I know I mentioned it at the end of last week's podcast, and people think I am crazy, because I am. But there's something here about FedEx Cup ranking. McCarty last week was 232nd in the FedEx Cup rankings, as he would be, because he's only played once. And I went through it last year. You know, Vijagas 147, Keziah 132, Eric Van Rooyen last year, 125. The list just goes on and on and on. Kevin Yu, a couple of weeks ago, was 96th. These aren't people towards the top of the FedEx Cup rankings that are actually winning. Now, to actually say that, last year, Tom Kim had made the top 50. And in this event, with better players, you may find that it's a top 50 player that made the BMW Championship that actually wins it. But I think there's something definitely this week on Daniel Berger. And I am not a Daniel Berger fan. Never have been, never will be. But Daniel Berger is 126th in the full series list at the moment, which basically means if he stays in that position, and I've gone through major medicals, I've gone through his career earnings, I've gone through the lot, I don't think he's got any exemptions left. He certainly hasn't got a win exemption. So if he finishes 126 or above, heading into 2025, he loses his ability to set his own schedule on the PGA Tour next year, which is a big deal for a guy that a few years ago was 12th in the world rankings, has won a Ryder Cup, has won a President's Cup. So he's sitting there pondering this over. Clearly, he needs results and he needs them quickly. And as Paul has always said, needs must with a lot of these golfers. When they have a target and they know they have to do something, rather than week after week, month after month of just kind of earning dollars, all of a sudden things become a lot more real. Berger needs something and he needs something quickly. And I think this course is pretty perfect for him, I have to say. I got 1 point each way on with him, 80 to 1 yesterday with the William Hill, and that has been bashed, seriously bashed. I'm seeing 70 to 1 out there at the moment with Treble 8 Sport. If you're very quick, they're offering 8 places each way. He's pretty much genuinely 66s. So Daniel Berger, he's played here once, finished 18th. He's never had to play here because he's always been one of the elites, one of the top 50s in the world, the kind of guy that's making tour championships, competing for major top 10s, competing for Ryder Cup spots, President Cup spots. All of a sudden now, it's all becoming quite real. But he's playing some very good golf of late. He's making some low top 10 scores per round, and he's iron straight off the tee. His approach plays better, and he's gaining from tee to green. The one thing that he's struggling with is a positive putter. But I believe his last two putting performances have been on the positive side. Not greatly, but they have been positive. So if he can make some putts this week, I think Daniel Berger should have a very good week. He's my biggest selection, 80 to 1 with William Hill, 8 places each way. Right, Barry, let's come to you.
The next one is Grayson Sigg.
Yeah, he's quite strong in my statistics when I look at him, actually.
Yeah, 4th and 11th in two of his last three outings, 47th, 44th, 28th here, progressive form in Vegas. Saw him up there in your rankings, so yeah, didn't really need much more motivation.
Grace Sig. He's a plotter, isn't he? So yeah, I get that.
90 to 1. Which was, yeah, it'll do. See how it goes.
What about you, Paul?
The other one I backed is Ben Coles at 100 to 1 with 8 places. Now, you talk about accurate sorts doing well around here. He is one of the most accurate on the tour. I think he's the most accurate in this field anyway. Second on tour for driving accuracy for the season to date. Mm. And he just keeps popping up on leaderboards lately. Yeah, doesn't particularly hang around. Well, hasn't done in the very recent past, but sixth at Puerto Rico back in March, second at the Byron Nelson in May. So he can hang around. 10th to halfway at the Pro Corps a few weeks back, and then second to the halfway point last week at Black Desert before falling away. Isn't a great field this week. If you take Tom Kim away from the top, then you know, it's much of a muchness with a lot of these players. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some of these middling prices or these kind of middling players start to find a way to produce a decent weekend and actually stick around. So, yeah, eight places at 100 to 1. I think he could sneak into a place or potentially threaten something better this week.
Just for reference, Chesson Hadley 100 to 1. Joel Damon 175 to 1, Taylor Pendrith 80 to 1, Alex Noren last year 66 to 1. They all got in the each way places.
Mm.
Oh, KH Lee was 66 to 1 as well. So yeah, 66 to 1 and out. Definitely fair game this week. There will be a number at the top. He's iron straight, Ben Coles, isn't he? And he keeps popping up and then slightly disappearing. That doesn't mean he's going to continually. So yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem to be able to produce that Sunday round. Joel Damon's interesting because he was quite high on your predictor stats and quite high on a lot of the statistics generally. 150 to 1. Oh, go on, Barry. Sorry.
Yeah, I've backed him.
Let's not steal Barry's thunder. Go on.
You're going to do a much better job explaining why I've put money on Joel Damon than I will. But yeah, if he's firing with his driver and keeping it tight, then yeah, he can really compete here. Two top tens his last 5 years, like, I'm in.
Tells you all you need to know, doesn't it? I believe you know, talking about these FedEx Cup ranking standings, full series ranking, as Lucas Glover said, it's difficult to know, it's difficult to understand what the hell's going on. And you know, he's a pro player that's been on the tour for 25 years. He's got no idea what these rankings mean. But Daniel Berger is 126. Joel Damon is he's holding on with his fingertips, 124. Don't forget, top 125 earn those full playing privileges for 2025, basically meaning that if they want to enter a non-signature event, they can just choose whatever schedule they want.
Mm. Stevie's so fifth in your predictor. How come you didn't just do a little half point each way? What is it? Or are you just leaving them to me?
No. I can see the logic in Joel Damon. Shining like a beacon. I tend to put 14 points up. Daniel Berger was that guy, so I went for the 81. But I've seen 150 to 1 out there right now. Yeah, I can see that with Joel Damon.
Yeah, cool. Well, I'll buy a pint when it cashes and Berger doesn't.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Berger will let me down. Always does.
Oh, he's definitely... Paul, are you waiting? Next week, Berger's going on the post-it note of doom.
Potentially, yeah.
I'm calling it now. That's my bet of the week. Berger to be on the post-it note of the doom. Post-it note next week.
Yeah. It was 71 for a reason.
There was a few of them that were tempted to put on my post-it note of doom after they were all WDing and missing cuts last week. But I haven't pressed the trigger just yet. Ricky Fowler, 66-1. Barry, any interest?
It is interesting.
Great desert golf record.
Yeah, hasn't he just?
I guess you never know. He could have been, you know, 16th a couple of weeks ago. He lives in Vegas. Butch is there. Has he been putting in a lot of training? He could have He could just be like stealthily ready. Has put together like a, you know, one of those movie montages about his training over the last few weeks, and he's just ready to go, like make a whole bunch of birdies. Who knows?
Yeah, worst bets.
It's kind of like Fowler and Woodland is another one who's interesting.
Yeah, he played really well last time out at, was it Sanderson Farms?
You know, and he gets that little low windproof stinger. It's a bit of wind forecast this week is interesting. The thing about Woodland is obviously there's value if I back him and he wins, but if I you know, he doesn't owe me anything, so kind of neutral on whether to back him or not. Because he can only disappoint me from here. Like he's reached first. He's reached like he's in my Hall of Fame of punts ever. So,
yeah.
Would you? The question you've got to ask yourself as a punter is: are you happy with Gary Woodland at 100-1 earning you that each way place? Because the likelihood of him finding a positive strokes gain putting week to win the tournament, I'd say, is negligible.
Good call. I'll probably still throw five each way in him, you know, but we'll see.
He lost over one stroke per round on the greens at the Sanderson Farms, and this shows you how good his tee to green game was. He finished 16th. He was number one for tee to green at the Sanderson Farms, and we know he's a proper desert rat, is Gary Woodland, isn't he? So, yeah,
talked me into it, Steve. Cheeky five each way.
Yeah. I mean, you're getting 20-1 for the top eight places if you're backing it that way, aren't you?
Would be some story if he came back and managed to win again, wouldn't it?
Right, on to this. It has to, I must say, Paul, it's probably my favourite tournament of the year, only because of the sponsor, the Estrella Dam Andalusia. Oh, started.
Andalusia Masters, yeah.
Andalusia. Right, I'll start again. The Estrella Dam Andalusia Masters. Take it away.
You're trying to get that kind of rasp in there with your pronunciation of Andalusia.
Yeah, my trip
Steve,
to
right?
Spain every year, I was trying to show off and it went horribly wrong.
The accent only comes in after a few beers, Steve. You should know that.
That is true. Some cerveza. I sounded more like Hong Kong Fui with that pronunciation. But yeah, Andalusia Masters, Paul, take it away.
Couple of Estrella Dams and you'd be there, I think. Yeah, going back to the Real Club de Golf Soto Grande for the second year this year. Shortish field again this week, 126, the same as last week. John Rahm returns. This is his third event in the last few weeks. 3-1 favourite, John Rahm, at very best at the moment, 11-4 generally. I suspect he'll probably be nibbled into 11-4. By the time they start, Rasmus Højgaard 16-1, David Puig at 22s, Thorbjørn Olsen same price 22s, Matt Wallace same price 22-1. Decent field. Tristan Lawrence 25-1, Nicholas Norgaard 25s 33-1. So for a regular DP World Tour event, even if you take John Rahm away, it's not bad. But of course, we've got Rahm imposing himself at the very top of that market there, so big decisions to be made as to how to play this week. Boyle Sports, Ladbrokes, Coral, all of them gone eight places each way. 1/5 of the odds are standard this week. Bet365, Betfred, both of them have some good eight place each way options this week. Actually, I got a couple of mine away with Betfred this week. There were some good combos in there. Now, the course, the Real Club de Golf Soto Grande, as I say, it's not far from Valderrama geographically, which is where we've historically held this event. So when you're flicking through the stats this week, the event stats or the combined stats, there's a note on there that says very clearly that only last year was played at this particular event or this particular course. So do bear that in mind. The courses are quite different. So Valderrama... historically, Yeah, historically, Valderrama, very tight, tree-lined, claustrophobic test. This isn't much longer. It's only a 7,101-yard par 72. It's a Robert Trench Jones design, but a little bit closer to the coast, much more exposed, wider off the tee. It's one of those courses that pretty much relies on the elements to give it some protection. And without that, it's there for the taking. You know, the complete opposite of a Valderrama test, where if you were going around in regular conditions or firm conditions and shooting under par, then it was almost a revelation. This is much more scoreable. Relatively wide fairways, as I say, four attackable par fives on the course. And we've got three sub 360-yard par fours. And depending on the tee positions for those par fours, they can become drivable, at least one of them anyway, for the longer hitters. So there'll be players attacking this course with some relish, I think. There was a renovation back in 2015 where we saw new A4 bent grass greens laid. So we've got top quality greens and a nice wide fairway. And to be honest, I'm not sure the course is going to get the protection that it needs from the elements this week to keep the scoring down. Looks like there's going to be some pre-event rain on Monday, Tuesday, potentially through to Wednesday. That's going to soften the fairways, soften the greens. And then for the actual 4 days of play, sun comes out. It's going to be warm, sunny, barely a cloud in the sky. Temperatures into the mid-70s Fahrenheit, so 22, 23, 24 degrees centigrade, that kind of number. And once the breeze goes on Thursday, it will be quite breezy on Thursday, 15 mile an hour maybe gusting 20. Once Thursday's done, then the breeze drops away as well. So it's going to be beautiful weather on a soft golf course that's set up for low scoring. So I think there's going to be a number of birdies and eagles made during the course of the week. And we should get ourselves a nice deep winning score, I think. Now, we've only got last year to go on in terms of the course. In terms of the course form anyway. Adrian Maronk won this at 18-1. Now, he shot 16 under. It was breezy for the first couple of days. I think we're probably likely to get 20 under or thereabouts would be my guess this week. Now, if you look at Maronk, he did most of the damage was actually with a putter, which is a bit strange for Maronk. If you look at his stats, it's kind of the opposite of what you'd expect for him. He was hitting it 305 off the tee. In fact, if you look at the top five finishers, all of them were in that kind of bracket, 305, 310. All of them were 17th or better on the week for driving distance. So those players last year who were aggressive from off the tee ended up prevailing. Maronk actually putted really, really well. The rest of his stats were a little bit odd, but first for strokes gained putting on the week, first for putts per greens and regulation. So both of the putting metrics were where he prevailed. Some of the other finishers, Matty Schmidt was second. He was second for strokes gained off the tee, and that kind of fits with what I'm thinking for this year. Richard Mansell was third. He was first for strokes gained off the tee. So I think if you're getting your drives away, leaving them in a position where you can attack the par fives or, you know, on and around the drivable par fours, then I think you're going to be setting yourself up for an awful lot of birdie and eagle looks this week. I think ultimately there's going to be different ways to compile a score here because there was a real mix of statistics last year. And of course, we've only got the 1 year to go on. So putting all your eggs in one basket may be a little dangerous. But for me, yeah, I think that's probably the way to go. A bit of aggression this week, I think. In terms of form, incoming form, Maronk had won the Italian Open earlier in the year. And then on his very most recent start, missed the cut at that weather reduced Dunhill Links. So not putting a great deal of credence in that before. Prior to that, some solid results around in and around the top 20. And previous Andalusian Masters winners, again, this is Valderrama form, so take it with a big pinch of salt. But each of the winners going back to 2010 had a top 20 finish in one of their previous four starts. So historically, around these parts, in this neck of the woods, you've needed a reasonable finish in the recent past to give yourself a chance here, I think. Course form, again, it's only last year to look at, so I'm not suggesting you should go back and look at Valderrama for anything other than a little bit of context, because yes, it's close geographically, but the courses are so different that it's just background info. I think ultimately, I think maybe longer hitters, those who can attack a soft golf course, those who can prevail on these par fives and the short par fours are the ones that are gonna do the business, I think. Anyway, I've backed five this week. I'll rattle through them and then I'll bring you guys in, because I know we've been talking for a long time on the pod already. I've got to oppose John Rahm. I can't go there at 3-1 or shorter. He finished seventh at the Dunhill Links, second at the Spanish Open, and yeah, he's very, very likely to be right in contention. Whether he actually wins or not, well, those last two events have at least shown that he is beatable in this kind of field. And it was a Spaniard who beat him at the Spanish Open in Madrid. And perhaps it's another of his compatriots who would be most likely to beat him here this week. So I've backed David Puig at 22-1. He was third in that Spanish Open behind Rahm. Fourth at the Dunhill Links on debut last time out. And that's interesting because he's coming to some of these courses, some of these events with no history or no experience whatsoever. So to finish fourth on his Dunhill Links debut was impressive, I think. Much more level playing field this week. He only got last year to go on. So, yeah, as I say, he's not going to be much of a disadvantage compared to the other players here this week. And we know from his live stats that he's a longer hitter. He putts well. I think that could be a really potent combination this week. First for strokes going off the tee in Madrid when he finished third there. 10th for strokes gained tee to green, 14th for strokes gained putting that week. So I think if he repeats those kind of stats here, then he's going to go very close. Could push John Rahm all the way this week, I think. David Puig. So he's up top. Johannes Veerman I've backed. The best price now, 66-1. Been nibbled in a little. Real up and down year for the American. Second at the Indian Open. Top tens in China. At the European Open. At the KLM Open. At the ISCO Championship. That co-sanctioned affair. And then pretty much fell off the... pretty much off the boil since at that point, I guess. Four missed cuts on the trot coming into last week. And it looked like he's going to have another missed cut because he was a couple of shots ahead of the cut line going into that infamous 18th hole at Le Golf National and then drove it in the water at the end of his second round. Managed to salvage bogey in the end. He had to get up and down from a 26-yard bunker shot to make the cut by one, which he did. And then from there, nobody outscored him over the weekend. 63-67, finished eighth. And he's got some real momentum coming into this week, I think. Opened with a 77 when he played here last year. So really poor start. Shot 67 on the Friday. Missed the cut just by one shot. I think with a better start this week, if he can maintain some of that momentum from the back end of last week, then maybe he contends for his second DP World Tour title this week. We shall see. Another eye catcher last week actually was Brandon Stone, 80-1 out there right now. 10th last week at Le Golf National, 80th now in the race to Dubai. I guess with a lot of these players, the incentive is to get to the top 70 for Abu Dhabi in a couple of weeks' time, or 3 weeks' time. And then on to the top 50 in Dubai, the Earth Course after that. So at 80th in the race, he's got to go and produce this week or next. Long enough off the tee, averages 307. Fourth for greens in regulation for the season was an eye-catching stat about Brandon Stone. But what really caught my eye last week, aside from the fact that he shot 64 in the final round to scythe his way through the field, is that he was putting really well. 7th for strokes gained putting on the week. Gained over 5 strokes on the greens over the 4 days. Now, with Brandon Stone, he's the kind of guy that is perennially, you know, in the hundreds in terms of his putting statistics compared to the rest of the field. He'd be well outside the 100th for strokes gained putting on tour, and the same for putts per greens and regulations. So for him to be putting so well on a given week, I think that warrants taking a chance on him here. Scored well in the par fives last week as well. I think he could be dangerous, Brandon Stone. Also, I think Daniel Hillier could be dangerous. 100 to 1, the best price out there right now. Now, I backed him here 12 months ago. He was fourth to halfway. It gave us some real hope before shooting 75 on the Saturday. That derailed him as ever. But 19th overall gives me a little bit of hope that he can kick on from that. 22nd for driving distance for the season. Does most of his damage strokes going off the tee. And I think that's, as I say, a strong determinant of potential success here this week. Won at the Belfry last season. His only top 10 since then came in Spain at the Spanish Open. He's won on Spanish soil back on his Challenge Tour days in 2021. And I think he could be running into some form, the Kiwi. 18th at Wentworth, 5th to halfway at the Dunhill Links, and would have finished better at the Dunhill Links overall. He was top 10 going into the final couple of holes, and then he made 7 at the road hole at St Andrews on Sunday. So dropped down the field a little bit, but I think he's playing better than that, and 100 to 1 is worth chancing. The final one, much more speculative, Simon Forsström, the Swede. 350 to 1 best price out there. Shorter if you want to take the extended places, around 250, 275 to 1 now, that kind of number for the 8 place options. Speculative, as I say, because he misses an awful lot of cuts, Forsström. 14 missed cuts are counted so far this season out of 21 starts, I think, or 20 where cuts were available to be made. But he's proven at the Sudal Open last year that he can win. Flashed some form last week, finished 10th. 5 top 10 finishes in Spain over the years. You never quite know in this game how these players are going to kick on from a flash in the pan. But Forsström seems to me that kind of sparky player who, when he finds something, can ride it for a week or two and then drop right back off the pace again. So happy to take a little bit of a chance with him this week at in and around the 300 to 1 point. So that's Forsström, Hillier, Brandon Stone, Veerman and Puig for me. Barry, you got any interest in this event?
Yeah, I've backed Winther again. Nice return each way last week. Second place. He was sixth here last year. Just kind of bet road itself, really. I don't need to find anything more to substantiate it. So that bet's on. The Puig bet's interesting. I think I'm debating that, but I probably will join you on that one. Sean, another course where he's not at a huge disadvantage to the rest of the field because they've only played it once. So yeah, showed a lot of moxie there a couple of weeks ago.
Definitely. Steve, anything from you?
I think it's Preed. He's a talent, isn't he? I'm on him. I managed to get all my bets on yesterday afternoon, nice and early, about 3:30. So I got Puig at 22 to 1 with Ball Sports, 8 places each way. I just think there's something special about this lad. I've been saying it. When I've watched him on live, he's a proper player, and clearly a couple of top 5 finishes on the DP World Tour. Yep. So why wouldn't you? Clearly, John Rahm's going to win by 6, but I've also gone for Jeff Winter. Barry, I'm with you on him.
Nice, Steve.
54-hole leader here last year after finishing top 3 or 4 in Paris the outing before. So it's almost like history repeating itself. I got him at 60 to 1 with Bet365, 8 places each way. I'm backing you, Paul, as well. I've gone for Brandon Stone. Brandon Stone's one of these guys that can kind of just pop up and win. It was interesting. He was really in the mix, wasn't he, Sunday afternoon at the Golf National.
Yep.
I do think that there's something in getting into that top 70. He's 80th in the race to Dubai, so I'm on him at 70-1 with bet 3, 6, 5, 8 places each way. The one that neither of you have mentioned that I've gone for, big hitters seem to have an advantage here. This guy was first for greens in regulation and sixth for ball striking last week at Le Golf National. I saw him laughing and joking with Jeff Winter on the 18th tee whilst they were waiting for all the groups in front of them to clear. He looks like he's in better spirits. For me, he's a highest class operator. Nikolai Højgaard, I've taken 45-1 with Betfred 8 places each way. He's 82nd in the race to Dubai, and he would be expecting himself to make it all the way to the DP World Tour Championship, where he won last year. Mm. Yeah. So I'd have thought Højgaard's got some instant targets on board that he needs to hit to make sure that he can defend his title.
Yeah.
So Puig, Højgaard, Nikolai, Jeff Winter, Brandon Stone. That's us, I believe. I know it's been a busy show, but thank you for sticking with us, listeners, if you have done. Much appreciated. I hope your bets go well, boys.
Yeah, best of luck, chaps.
You too, lads.
Hope the listeners' bets go well. We'll be back next week. I've got the Zozo Championship in Japan. And Paul, what have you got?
It's the Genesis Championship over in South Korea. So we're both over in the East. Tom Kim playing, apparently.
And Ben Arn.
Mm.
There you go. We'll be back for that. Right, see you again soon. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf.